President Trump signed a series of executive orders on Friday that aim to bring down prescription drug prices in the United States. The orders aim to have healthcare providers pass on discounts to patients, eliminate so-called middle manager dealings, allow prescription drugs to be imported from other countries, and potentially use Medicare as leverage for negotiations. While the president is revisiting a 2016 campaign promise with these orders, critics say they're not enforceable and are largely symbolic. Our next guest joins to talk about how prescription drug prices are regulated and the politics behind these executive orders. Philip Rocco is an assistant professor of political science at Marquette University. He's the author of the book Obamacare Wars, Federalism, State Politics, and the Affordable Care Act. Phil, welcome back to the show.
Hey, good to be with you, Rob.
Well, these four executive orders, first of all, big picture, how big a deal were they?
Well, I mean, in one sense, you can see this as some of these things were already sort of going into the works already. There are two orders that the FDA and the Trump administration were sort of already working on. So the executive order sort of brings those to light, makes them public, and allows the president to claim some political leverage or ownership over. But they're not huge deals. The issues that really are big deals here, the plan that would allow for what's called reference pricing of drugs, that would allow the government to negotiate with drug companies based on international reference prices, which would really potentially be a lot of savings. That is something that the structure of it and indeed like the reaction from the pharmaceutical industry suggests that this is certainly a big plan, but and would have substantial consequences if implemented. But given the structure of it and given the response from the industry, it seems pretty unlikely that that is actually going to go into effect. So the places where we're seeing like the biggest movement are also the places where this seems like the most sort of election year politicking rather than sort of substantive policy making.
Let's talk about that reference pricing idea. We hear the complaint often that here in the U.S. we pay X amount more for drug Y than they do in, say, European countries or in Canada. How would this referencing idea work if it actually came into effect?
Yeah, so this is something, and I'll just the sort of by way of background, this is something that when you look at public opinion surveys, you know, you get a supermajority of Americans, Democrats and Republicans alike, suggesting that the federal government should have the power to, through Medicare, negotiate the price of drugs. And what this proposal would do if enacted is it would allow Medicare to negotiate for the price of a drug on a particular list of Medicare approved drugs that matches the lowest price paid among foreign governments. Now, this is something that there have been some studies of what it would be like if Medicare Part D had access to negotiated federal pricing for about 200 drug formulations that seniors typically take. And you know, the annual federal savings would be something like $21.9 billion. So, you know, a lot of money, and obviously consumers would see some of that savings. Now, the issue, there are sort of two issues. One issue is that in the structure of the executive order, the administration doesn't even begin putting this rule into effect or starting the process until late August. And that is supposed to create breathing room for the pharmaceutical industry to propose something else. And so the question you have to ask is, if that sort of breathing room is there and it's widely assumed, and the pharma lobbying group has sort of specifically said that there will be pushback, probably there will be, you know, if this were to go into effect, a lawsuit. But if that is the structure and if that's the industry's response, you know, can we really expect this rule to go into effect? Is it really a sort of does it represent a substantive sort of change in position for the administration? And I think there are some doubts there, and they're fairly reasonable ones. The other sort of critique that some analysts of this rule have made is that when you base the U.S. prices on these international reference prices, that it's not exactly clear how those other countries with those lowest prices paid are going to react. And in fact, it could be the case that in response, those countries raise their prices to some extent in response to the rule. Now, it's very, very hard to say with any certainty exactly what would happen, and that's sort of, you know, I'll sort of leave that to the health economists. But I think overall what this suggests is that, yes, I mean, this is a very popular sort of idea. I think if implemented, the savings would be tremendous. The question is, you know, how deep does this preference go within the administration? I mean, it's typical that presidential administrations in an election year will propose things that they don't necessarily have a credible commitment to. And so, you know, from what we've been seeing thus far, there's some doubts about that with the so-called favored nations rule, which is this part of the executive order.
Talking to Phil Rocco from Marquette University, looking at the president's executive orders on prescription drug costs. You can join in at 800-642-1234 with your questions about these orders and how they work, or your thoughts, what you would like to see when it comes to federal policy on prescription drug costs. 800-642-1234. I want to give a listen to the president on that the Medicare negotiation issue, criticizing Congress here.
Under our ridiculous system, which has been broken for decades, we aren't even allowed to negotiate the price of drugs. Can you believe it? I said, when are we going to negotiate? We're not allowed. We're restricted by Congress from negotiating the price of drugs. Can you imagine? You say, I want to get a better price. I'm sorry, sir. You're not allowed to do that. That's illegal. What kind of a system is that?
He's talking about Medicare there. Why is this something that Medicare isn't allowed to negotiate on?
Well, I mean, you have to consider the politics of health reform in Congress, okay? And the way that I like to put it is this. When there is a new potential benefit on the table, say the new Medicare Part D benefit or the Affordable Care Act, you know, expansion of Medicaid, those are the kind of policies that drive public support in a big way because there's really something on the table that's interpretable or legible for most people. But when Congress puts policies on the table that they're not necessarily as legible or salient, they might have a broad benefit for the public, but they're not as legible for the public. The main people that come out, or the main organized industries that come out to deliberate over the bill or to lobby over the bill, are the pharmaceutical industry. And so, you know, we've seen this over the last 20 years. Really, I think you saw the first sort of instance of this in the Medicare Modernization Act of 2003, which created Medicare Part D. And then again, with the Affordable Care Act, is that the sort of the price of admission or the toll for going on the toll road of legislation is on health reform, or has been historically, that if you want to get a big reform passed, pharma's price of admission is you can't do anything to really limit our profits for pharmaceuticals. And I think the history of the lobbying over the Affordable Care Act is one very clear place where, in order to get pharma, if not on board, then at least a little bit less aggressive in its opposition to the ACA, the designers of the law had to sort of abandon their interest in giving Medicare the power to negotiate prices. That is something that, were it possible and were pharma not the roadblock there, you can imagine that the people who wrote the ACA probably would have been pretty interested in doing that. But this is something where the sort of pluralistic interest group lobbying politics that surround these issues really give a kind of veto power to these pretty well mobilized interests like pharma.
We continue our conversation about recent executive orders signed by President Trump that are, in theory, supposed to bring down the cost of prescription drugs. Philip Rocco is with us, assistant professor of political science at Marquette University, author of the book Obamacare Wars. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What do you think about the move from President Trump? How do you think the pharmaceutical industry should be regulated? Is there something you'd like to see done to bring down the cost of prescription drugs in the United States? Do you have questions about the politics behind this and how this all works? Join in at 800-642-1234. 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We heard from Anura Rose on Facebook who writes, what would be more impressive would be if he signed an executive order that a company could only make a 20% profit off of the medications. Phil, this idea of limiting profits for prescription drug companies, is this something that's been out there in the political sphere?
Yeah, I mean, so just to give you a sense of the public opinion on this, there are about 72% of Americans surveyed. I think this is a Kaiser Family Foundation poll last year. About 72% think that the pharmaceutical industry has too much power. About 80% think that they make too much in profit from the medications and prescriptions that they sell. And it's not necessarily that hard to understand why people have those sort of attitudes, right? About 6 in 10 Americans take a prescription drug. 1 in 4 take 4 or more prescription drugs. And about 79% of Americans say that they find prescriptions to be unaffordable. And it's interesting to see what's happened during the COVID-19 pandemic, because we've actually seen a pretty substantial spike in prescription drug prices. There's been a measurable several hundred percent increase in those prices. And, you know, not surprisingly, there's been a huge increase in a fear among the public that they won't be able to afford the prescriptions that they take anymore. And so from the sort of in the public sphere and sort of in the public's mind, there's something unsavory and in a way unfair about the amount of profit that is made off of prescription drugs. I mean, if you look at the quarterly reports of pharmaceutical companies during the pandemic, as other industries have faltered and failed, these companies are doing quite well. Now, when it comes to, you know, enacting a an executive order to limit profits to something like 20%, that would obviously take an act of Congress to do something like that, or, you know, to put another way, to make this sector into a more sort of public entity, I think would take a sort of a legislative revolution, really sort of on the order of the New Deal's sort of legislative revolution. But it's not impossible by any means. It's something that it's hard to imagine coming out of an executive order, and certainly probably not an executive order from the Trump administration. And so what we have is, you know, a set of proposals that I think try to work to some extent within the existing legislative framework, even maybe pushing the envelope a little bit compared to what we might have thought the administration would have done back in 2017. But certainly, I think, are trying to respond to this sort of massive feeling that's very consistent with what the caller or the listener said, which is that there's something sort of unsavory about the amount of profits that these companies make from prescription drugs.
Let's bring on a caller now. Gordon is with us in Fitchburg. Gordon, hi.
Hi, I hope you can hear me. Thank you for taking the call. I wanted to check a couple of things, if the speaker could remind us, if my recollection is accurate. Wasn't Medicare Part D separate from the Affordable Care Act? My recollection is Medicare Part D was put in during the Bush administration, and I wonder if we could be reminded who was the Secretary of Health and Human Services during that time. Medicare Part D was one of the largest, maybe the largest, public service benefit since Medicare itself.
And I'm going to jump in, Gordon, because we just have a minute or so left. Medicare Part D predated the Affordable Care Act, I think, right?
That's right. Phil? Yeah, absolutely. And I did. I think I mentioned in my comments that there was the 2003 Medicare Modernization Act, which was passed with broad bipartisan support and signed by a Republican president. So, you know, it's not out of the realm of possibility for there to be bipartisan agreement on these issues. But again, the cost of doing business back then in 2003 with Medicare Part D was leaving the government's ability to control or to negotiate the prices sort of off the table or very, very limited.
Thanks a lot for that call. Just very briefly, Phil, what are you watching for next on this?
Well, I think what I'm going to be watching for is what the tete-a-tete between the administration and the industry is. Obviously, the industry right now has sort of balked at even meeting with the White House. But, you know, the question is now that the administration really, on the favored nations rule in particular, the other sort of pieces of regulation here are a little bit more modest, but on that one in particular, the question is they've sort of left a wide open space for the industry to promote something else. It's a question of whether or not that something else will be something that Trump wants to run on in an election year. The favored nations rule arguably would be a more popular thing and probably out of joint with what the industry would recommend. So that's what I'll be watching for.
Phil, thanks a lot for joining us again.
Great to be here, Rob.
Philip Rocco is an assistant professor of political science at Marquette University. He's the author of the book Obamacare Wars, Federalism, State Politics, and the Affordable Care Act. By the way, Gordon referenced the Department of HHS secretary at the time of Medicare Part D. I believe that would be Wisconsin's own Tommy Thompson. We talked today about President Trump's recent series of executive orders that aim to lower the cost of prescription drugs and the politics behind that move.